Good afternoon. It's the 30 days since we lost Chacham Avad Yazich Tzadik V'Kadosh L'Baracha. And I'll tell you, at least personally for me, having known him since I was really an infant, he used to come to Los Angeles, and we had the zechut of him staying with my grandfather, who was then the president of the Sephardic Kehillah in Los Angeles. The loss is really, it's too immense to even put into words. There were a few times right after the Ptira that I was asked to write things, write about the Rav, and I couldn't, it was very hard, I couldn't bring myself to write, because it was essentially like asking to distill this massive, massive, massive life into just a few lines. And the truth of the matter is, you think that with the time passing, it's supposed to get easier, but with the time passing, it really only gets more difficult. Because as the time passes, you sense more and more the immensity of the loss of what we had with the Rav, Zichr Tzadik, the Bracha. But there's, it says in the Gemara in Barachot, Agra de Hespedad Luye, that what one gets out of a Hesped, the sachar, so to speak, or the benefit that a person gets out of a Hesped, Dluye. The word Dluye is not clear what it means. Dluye literally comes from Dli, from the Lashon of drawing something out. So Rashi on the Gemara there says that we draw out tears with a Hesped. It's enough that it says in the Gemara that a person who's kasher, just kasher, a person who was a good person, dedicated his life to good things, connected himself to Israel and to Torah, that a person who doesn't cry over such a person really should be concerned about whether he has a heart of stone or not. That's just with an Adam kasher. But with a person like Chacham Avadya, Dluye, to draw tears, shouldn't be so hard. But there's another idea about what Luya means, and that is that with a Hesped we should try to learn something. Try to learn something, many things, from the life that was lived. So for me, it's particularly difficult. I'll be honest, it's particularly difficult because to have the zechut to be able to know the Rav intimately over almost 40 years is a unique loss, because everybody's speaking. Of course, there's Hespedim. Everybody's talking about the greatness of the Rav and how much he knew and the things that he taught. And all of those things are very significant. But what we miss in those things is the man. The struggles that he went through, the obstacles that he went through, the life that he lived on a day-to-day basis in his interaction with people, those are things that are lost, and those are things almost that are eclipsed by the greatness of who he was to everyone. I mean, we saw at the Levaya something unprecedented for hundreds, if not thousands of years in the streets of Yerushalayim. Masses of people, never before, or for a very long time since before, gathered into the streets in order to be able to give honor and respect to this great Gaon, who in some way touched very ordinary lives, very everyday people's lives. So what do we get out of it? I mean, how are we supposed to deal with it? How are we supposed to understand what this is? And the truth is, I'm speaking to, Baruch Hashem, a group of people who perhaps didn't see the Rav in his heyday, for lack of a better term, in his absolute glory and greatness. And so what I'd like to do on the Shloshim, because on the Shloshim for me, it's not getting any easier, it's only getting more difficult, to give a sense of what it is that we lost, and to give us a sense of what it is that we can draw from the life of Chacham Avadya Yosef Zatzal, and that we can carry it forward and move it forward. So the fact that he had an amazing memory is, you know, that's famous. And he did. He had an absolutely phenomenal memory. You're talking about an individual who from the time that he was a child, everything that he read, he remembered and did not forget. I've seen it, I saw it personally many times, and where he would be able to say things, quote things, open books on the spot. You would ask him any obscure question. It's a halakha l'maaseh, really. You're not supposed to ask your rabbi a question that he's not involved with. Halakha mefureshet. You don't ask a halakha, or you don't ask an inyan Torah to your Rav if he's not involved in that issue. Why? You don't want to catch him off guard. It's embarrassing. It's not comfortable. Not everything is present in a person's mind 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The halakha just didn't apply to Chalavadi. It just didn't apply to him. I mean, you could ask him anything at any time, and every single element of it was present in his mind at every moment. So it's remarkable. I mean, there's no question about the fact that that's remarkable. But I'm going to say something. He was not the only person on the planet that had a photographic memory. I know other people that had photographic memories. Still alive. But they didn't even begin to rival Chacham Ovadia. Because he spent every possible moment that he had filling the memory. It wasn't by osmosis or downloading it from some crazy place. He spent every word that he knew by heart. He spent reading it somewhere, sometime, some way. He used to spend nights in bookstores in Yerushalayim telling the owners, "I'll watch your store. Just let me read the books." And he would read Shelot u'Tshuvot. I'm talking to Bahurei Yeshiva, so I don't have to explain these things. You can appreciate what I'm saying. He would read Shelot u'Tshuvot cover to cover. And that's one thing. It's not just okay. So he read the Shelot u'Tshuvot cover to cover, and therefore he knew all the Shelot in the book, right? So I asked him one time, because they said there was a story, I wasn't sure if it was true. They said that they tested his knowledge of Shelot u'Tshuvot and what they had in them against the Bar Ilan. You know the Bar Ilan project, right? You could put it. So they had it, this project, the Bar Ilan project, where they put all of the Shelot u'Tshuvot in there. They put in, you know, subjects into the thing, how many he presented and how many Chacham Ovadia knew. And he won every single time. He beat it every single time. So I heard that story. I wasn't sure if it was a true story, and I was embarrassed to ask him, but I finally asked. It was nice. We were happy. It was a Friday night. It was after dinner. We were talking. And by the way, something you should know about the Rav. I'm going to stick these things in the middle when I'm talking. He was a matmid unlike any individual, I guarantee you, that you've ever seen. There was not an open minute that he did not spend reading, studying, and engaging and learning. Even when I got married, the night that I got married, we had the ceremony. It was in the Hilton near Har Tzofim, the Hyatt near Har Tzofim. And between the ceremony and the dinner, they wanted to pause some time, right? Because there was 1,000 people at the ceremony and they only wanted to have 700 people at dinner. So they wanted to span some time so people would live. So I sat with my then very, very new bride. But we don't do Yehud, the Sfaradim, right after dinner. So who they put with us, so it shouldn't be Yehud or Rav. He sat there with us. Not intimidating at all, you know, it wasn't a problem. So he came in, shalom, shalom. He said a few nice words to us, and he just sat and was reading Gemara. He used to do this, he would read Gemarot. He would just go through Gemarot. In the car, he had a little light in the car. I don't know if you've ever seen his car. Right? So he had, from the old days, from the time he had a Volvo, and then it became a BMW, whatever. But they used to have the curtains, you know. And he would sit in the car, and there were a few times, many times I was able to ride with him in the car. And he would sit in the back of the car and he would just say, "Tadlik," which means light it up, yeah? And the light would go on in the back. And he'd just read, "Marot, Marot." And he didn't have downtime. There was no such thing as downtime. However, and this is an important thing for Bahurei Yeshiva to understand. This is an important thing to understand. Because if you're at all serious about your Torah, and at this time it's a question, you know, how serious are you about your Torah? Is it a year away? You have some time off? Are you taking advantage of this time and actually learning? And you should know, and as when I was your age, they told us, and it was hard to appreciate, but I'll say it to you anyway. You will never get this time again in your life. You're never going to have time like this again in your life. You will get married. You will have children. You will need to earn a living. You will not have a moment like this in your life ever again, unless by some tremendous chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that He gives you another opportunity to do so. And even if He does, even if you're a multi-millionaire sometime in the future, and you do not have to work, you will never find yourself in a situation where you will not have de'agah, which means you will not have to be concerned about something. Because even if you've got the money, you know, marbe nechasim, marbe de'agah. The more you've got, the more you've got to worry. So you'll be sitting there learning, but there'll be something you've got to check on. You will not be able to simply be here at this time, having to do nothing else but engage in your Torah and enlightening yourself. You have this time to do it. So you understand, you're weighing here, what does Torah mean to you? You know, how important is it for you in your life and the time that you spend? And so it's important to understand with that, how do I balance engaging in life? What's considered bitul Torah? It's not an easy question. And a lot of times we don't get clear guidance on it. How much am I allowed to engage in life? So the Rav, he was always learning, except when he wasn't. When he was at Friday night dinner on Shabbat, he was at dinner. He didn't sit at dinner with a book by the table. He didn't sit at dinner and read something while he was sitting with the family. He sat with his family. He spoke about the food. Or he spoke about what was going on in everybody's life. Or he told us stories and reminisced about his life and what he went through. And he sang pizmonim, he sang songs and zmirot at the table. And he would sit for hours. And of course, it was always divrei Torah shulchan, not a dvar Torah, divrei Torah shulchan. The dialogue, the discussion was always engaged in Torah. Of course, what else are you going to talk about? How else are you going to engage things? It's all a question of your framework. How do you think? If you think in Torah, the words that you say on the table are divrei Torah. If you don't think in Torah, you could say it dvar Torah and still it's not Torah. Just a question of what's the world that you're living in when you're sitting at a table. He spent hours. And then when he was done, he went back to learning. But he engaged in life. He was involved in life. But he didn't have bitul. Bitul means there was nothing that was just not productive. There was never a situation where he just wasn't doing, just hanging out doing nothing. There was always something he was involved with. So I asked him at dinner. I said, Rav, you know, they said that there was a Bar Ilan project. They said that, you know, that they tested it against you. I said, Ken, you doubt the Yotel. He said, I know more than the Bar Ilan. But in the most, not in an arrogant way, Hasbro, just in the most matter-of-fact way, he said it. You know, the testing me against the machine. Oh, that was the machine. But that's the idea. The idea is not the memory. The idea is, what do you do with your memory? What do you fill it with? How much time do you spend? And beyond that, do you choose to be intelligent or not intelligent? The Ramban in Hilchot Teshuvah, it was always difficult for me, this halakha in Ramban. He writes in Hilchot Teshuvah, the first part is not difficult. He says, look, a person can be stingy or generous. A person can be mean or nice. It's all a choice. But then he says, a person can be stupid or intelligent. What do you mean? It's all a choice. It's a choice. What if your IQ is 2? How are you supposed to be, you know, what are you supposed to do? Not everybody has the same IQ. But I realize that that's not what Harambam is saying. What Harambam is saying over there is, so your IQ is not the most powerful IQ, but you have capacity to learn, right? Whatever it is that you have capacity to learn, every single person has a choice to say, what am I going to do with the brain that I've got? I can either fill it or not fill it. I can choose to know something or not know something. Every person has that question and that choice. Every single person. It's just a question of how much or how much not. So Chaim Avadia filled it to the brim. He didn't ever look at something and say, I don't have to know that. I don't have to find, that's not a part of Torah that I'm going to deal with. I don't need to deal with. That's the difference. So he had an amazing memory. We don't have an amazing memory. Fine, we can't compare. But what did he do with the mind that he had? That we can compare. And we can learn. And say, do I put the time in order to be able to fill it or not? But then the next question is good. So now you know a whole bunch of stuff. What are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with it? What he did with it. What he did with it. Now this is hard to appreciate because you live in a world post Chacham Avadia. It's hard to appreciate what a world pre Chacham Avadia looked like. Yeah? Both for the Sfaradim and the Ashkenazim. And I'll explain to you why. For the Sfaradim, it's kimat muvan me'elav. If you have a question in practically any halakha, you know, if you're at all familiar, you know that you'll find it by Chacham Avadia somehow or another. He either wrote about it, wrote something about it, somewhere, whatever, you will be able to find your answer more likely than not by something in Chacham Avadia. That's the reality, it's not an exaggeration. In all four places in Shulchan Aruch, kimat on every Gemara that you learn, there'll be something that he wrote about or said. It's not an exaggeration. For the Ashkenazim, let's say you're not posek like the Rav. You have to respond to the Rav. And that's what the Ashkenazim would do for the last generation. Because he started to bring things up that were quiet for a long, long time. That nobody really looked at. Like, for example, you know, he brought out not just laws, he brought out klalim, he brought out principles. Principles that until he came around, nobody but Talmidei HaChamim knew. Because what? It's for Talmidei HaChamim. Now something amazing about the Rav, he said, you know what? Torah is not an elite thing. It's not just for Talmidei HaChamim. Torah is a Yerusha. It's Morasha Kilat Yaakov. It belongs to everybody. And if I can make it accessible to everybody, I'm going to make it accessible to everyone. There were two ways that he did this. I'll explain in a moment. But this was one of the missions of his life. I learned everything. I spent the nights up in the bookstores reading every single book cover to cover. And not only that, but categorized while I was reading where everything goes. That's another level to the learning, you don't realize. It's a whole other level to learning. It's one thing to read Shavuot Shavuot cover to cover. What about the information? Anybody who's read a tshuva in Yabia Omer, and you're looking, you're trying to understand the thing, and he says, Ve'ayen po, right? He says, take a look over here. So you go, okay, I actually have that book, you know, because 90% of the books you don't have that he quotes. But I've got that book, yeah, I'm going to open this one. So you go over, you get Hayim Sha'al, you know, from the Chidah, you open it up, you're trying to find in the middle this massive tshuva in Hayim Sha'al, what's he called? And there's one line that says this inyan that he was talking about, that in a tshuva that has nothing to do with what we're talking about, you know, whatever it was. And you realize, you stand there, it's like a small moment of quiet, where you stand there dumbfounded, realizing, he read this tshuva from cover to cover, from beginning to end, saw this line and categorized it in his mind, said this line has to do with that and that. And quotes it. Now, still, I want to impress upon you, you understand, he didn't own a computer. There was no Google, there was no search, there was no Bar Ilan, this was completely and entirely what he drew from his own mind in terms of his own reading. That's how he learned and how he categorized. So he brought things out to every person. He said, I need to make Torah accessible to everybody. Two ways I'll tell you. First way was, he wrote in easy language and made it accessible and readable to everyone. Even Yabia Omer, anybody who's tried to read a Yabia Omer, it's not so easy, it's not so simple. But he did one major thing in Yabia Omer that was already an attempt to make it readily accessible for everybody. You know what he did? He printed it in block letters, not in Rashi letters. Everybody until that time wrote their Shulot Tshuvot. I mean, if you were a Chashuv guy, you know, Chashuv Rav, you don't print your Tshuvot in block letters. You know, Torah is supposed to be in Rashi letters. That was just a... Who prints in block letters? A newspaper? Right? Nobody. And God in the Chumash, but outside of that, nobody prints in block letters. And he writes it. He says that printing in block letters, it should be easier for people to read. I'm going to try and write out some Rashi Tevot. Then he printed Yehavedat. Yehavedat, he says explicitly in the introduction to Yehavedat, I have made it simpler for digestion. I have opened up Rashi Tevot. I've translated Aramaic. It's here. Read it. It's all there for you. It's all accessible. I did all the work. I'm just putting it out for you like a Shulchan Aruch, a ready table. Just come and read. He did it in Halichot Olam, which was the prototype for Yalkut Yosef, this beautiful, elegant version. Every halakha just perfectly worded. He had amazing mastery of the language. Perfectly worded. Beautiful mekorot, each one clear, understandable. You would read his work, and it would just be so clear. To the point that you felt, how are you supposed to argue? And it was really hard to argue. And that's why I'm saying for the Ashkenazim, it was a hard thing because he presented Torah. That was, and what did he do? He didn't do this thing like, I'm only going to quote my people. He crossed all party lines. And I'm going to say to you, there's nobody still who did this like he did. Quote, didn't matter where they came from. Were they kippas ruga, na kippas ruga, kippas hora, na kippas hora? They were fur on their head, nothing on them. Didn't matter what it was. Older than him, younger than him. To him it was Torah. I don't know where you are, what you, I'm talking. You wrote something meaningful. You wrote something either that I have to question or bring as a support or whatever it is. I'm going to bring it. I'm not supposed to quote you. I'm supposed to. It wasn't an issue with it. Everybody was brought. And that's why people who... It was very difficult to argue because if you've got the entire thing that was ever written on any subject presented in front of you in terms of Tshuva, how are you supposed to argue? It's very difficult. The only way you could argue is say, look, I'm going to take a different approach on it. In which you would say, yeah, but you can't take that approach because I'll bring you 15 hachamim that say differently than you do. One time, Chaim Yitzchak, the Rishon Tzion, Hashem Yarich Amad, my Rosh Yeshiva, he was giving a shiur. It happened to be that in the audience of this shiur, it was a particular, you know, Gedolei Torah gathering. So in this particular shiur was Rav Shalom Mashash, who was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim at the time. So Chaim Yitzchak said it halacha. And Rav Mashash got up in the middle of the shiur, because he was much older, and you know, he was the Rabbi Rashi of Yerushalayim. And he contradicted Chaim Yitzchak in the class, in the middle. Said, no, we don't hold like that. It's not like that. Chaim Yitzchak didn't know what to answer at the time. So he went back to the Rav that night. And he said, Abba, Rav Mashash, he said that the halakha was saying, I heard this halakha from you, but he brought all of these poskim that weren't, halakha is not like this. Chaim Avadya said to him, he goes, what are you talking about? There's 15 hachamim that say not like you were saying. And he quoted him, the 15 hachamim. He said, Abba, how come Rav Mashash didn't know that? He goes, I didn't write it yet. How's he going to know? Only Chaim Avadya could say something. But that's what he did. He presented the entire thing. It was all there and accessible. And then you just had to say, how come? I just got to read it. It's all there. That was the first thing that he did. All accessible. The second thing that he did was his personal presentation of Torah. And that, if you didn't see it, and that's why you have to hear this, because if you didn't see it, you didn't really know it. And when he was in his prime, and I'm going to use that word, because I would say Chas V'Shalom, it was a prime or not a prime. There's such a concept as a person bekohota, right? In his highest strength. In his highest strength, he used to speak like he was giving orders to an army. He would speak quickly, speak clearly, forcefully, but not overbearing. You would hear it, and his language was just beautiful, and the way he spoke was just beautiful. He would walk into the room, and he had his robe. He had his sunglasses, which definitely added to the whole look. He had it because his eyes were very, very sensitive to light. He had a lot of problems with his eyes during his entire life. But he would come into a room, he walked quickly. We saw him, you probably saw him only at the end of his life. He would walk quickly into a room. He would make sure not to bother people, not to come in the middle of a room that everybody would have. If he had a way to be able to come around, he'd come around. He was so careful about bothering people, about putting people into inconveniences. He was very, very careful and sensitive about that. But he would engage with people. And he would find something that was important to you or meaningful to you, and he'd talk to you about it, and engage with you about it. And so it wasn't just that he brought you something to learn. He brought himself to people. So people felt, and when you saw him, it's hard to explain unless you saw him. When you saw him, you just felt, wow, he's just so cool. No, really, I have to use that word because that's how people felt. They were excited to see him. They were just excited to see him. And so it made the Torah that he was teaching beautiful. So he was mehavev Torah on people that never opened the book in their life. You understand? And at the same time, he wasn't an elitist. He cared if you never opened the book, but he didn't care if you never opened the book, because it didn't mean that he couldn't talk to you. It didn't mean that there wasn't something that he could present to you that would make Torah beautiful in your eyes. And that is what he did for his entire life, his whole life. And you wonder why he had 800,000 people at his funeral. People felt a personal connection. He made Torah personal. And that's why I say, I was thinking the other night, he's like Moshe and Aharon. They say that about Shmuel and Navi. Shmuel shakul ke Moshe v'Aharon, right? So it's in Chazal. What was Moshe and Aharon? So it says Moshe, he was the father figure of Israel. He's the one that gave over the law to Israel. But the Am didn't feel that they had this personal connection, each one a personal connection with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Torah itself. The Rambam says that they would look to Moshe to be able to figure out how HaKadosh Baruch Hu was relating to Israel at the time. In other words, they wanted to know what's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's opinion of us right now. They just look at Moshe because it was identical. That's how they used to relate to Moshe. That's why the only reason the Rambam holds that when Moshe got angry at hitting the rock, at the whole thing of Meribah, that it was inappropriate because he was angry, but God wasn't angry. Otherwise, they looked at Moshe Rabbeinu as representative of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the last. Aharon took that Torah and made it personal for people. And that's why he was Ohevet HaBeriyot Makarvan HaTorah. So there was this dual partnership between Moshe and Aharon, where Moshe would be the strength of the law, and Aharon would bring it into the people, where the people felt a personal connection. Chacham Avadiyah was both. At the same time, he had the ability to give the strength of the law, the power of the law was all there, and at the same time, he could sit with the lowest person, the highest person, didn't matter if he was talking to the president, to the king of Spain, or he was talking to his carpenter. He made the Torah accessible to people in the way that they loved it and they wanted to connect. What was like Shmuel? It says Shmuel was connected Moshe and Aharon. It says, you know what Shmuel did? It says, until Shmuel's time, En Hazon Nefratz. There was no Nevoah. The gates of Nevoah shut down. He opened it all up again, Shmuel. He got people connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu again. People were able to see and be engaged with HaKadosh Baruch Hu again. And that's what Chaim Avadiyah did. He made people feel, you know what? I don't just have to hear what's halakha. I can learn halakha. I can read. I can understand. I can know. And the whole gates were opened up. So I was saying in the beginning, not just rules. He didn't just teach halakhot. He taught concepts to people that used to be relegated only to the top talmidei hachamim. They used to hold them. Like, Ein gozrim gezerot medatim. What does that mean? We have no authority in our days to make a gezerah the way that the Gemara was able to make gezerot, or the Hachamim in the time the Gemara was able to make gezerot. Nobody told people that. The Ben Adam, the regular person in the street, nobody heard such a thing. So it was very hard for us to hear. What if somebody says you're not allowed, which means what? What's a gezerah? For example, not allowed to ride a horse on Shabbat, right? It's a deoraita drabanan. What is it? It's a drabanan. The Torah has no issues with riding a horse on Shabbat. The Hachamim say don't ride the horse. Why? Because there's a Torah problem that you'll encounter with riding a horse. You'll break a branch off of the tree in order to be able to hit it. Now you, us, we don't ride horses. Not a little really relevant. We don't understand. Maybe you would, maybe you would. I don't know. You'd probably break a branch off. But Chazal understood horses. Everybody was riding horses. That's what you did. How do you put you? Could you imagine a car without a gas pedal? Okay, you got to get it to go faster. You're going to break off a branch. That's what it is. But that's an Isur Deoraita. That's Tolesh. That's a Gezerah. Don't do X, which is fine otherwise, because you may come to do Y, and therefore X becomes a. That's a Gezerah. We can't do that anymore today. Where did he write this? He wrote this with riding a bike on Shabbat. As an example. So Chacham Ovadia, what does he do? He brings a whole teshuvah as to why there's no issue with riding a bike on Shabbat. At the end he says, minhag not to do it. But even that's important to understand. Where does the rule lie? Is it in Yisur Chachamim? Is it in Yisur Torah? Is it a minhag? It's not important to know the difference between these things. Got to know the difference between these things. So what do people say about bike? What's the famous reason you can't ride a bike? Who can tell me? Because you may come to fix it. That's a gezerah. Don't ride a bike because you may come to fix it. Assuming that fixing is nisur deoraita, which is not so pashut that it is. So what does Chacham Ovadia say? En gozrim gezerot medate. Not allowed to do that. Why? It's not written in the Gemara. Yeah, but the horse is written in the Gemara. Yeah, but that's a horse. Not allowed to extrapolate horse to bike. En gozrim gezerot medate. Are there other reasons? You could go read the Teshuvah. It's there. It's very easy to find. Wrote it in three different places. In the end, he says, minhag not to do it. Try not to break them up. But understand what it is. What about lights with dimmer switches? You're allowed to read in a room that has a light with a dimmer switch? How come it's not shemayatet aner? Not allowed to read by an oil lamp. Why not allowed to read by an oil lamp? You can take the oil lamp, you know, tilt it a little bit in order to be able to make it burn a little brighter. It's an Isur Havara. Isur Deoraita. The reading is not Asur. But it's Asur. X is Asur because you may come to do Y. The famous story in the Gemara of Ishmael. So what about a dimmer switch? Same thing, no? No. Not the same thing. Why is it not the same thing? We don't make gezerot. Not allowed to make gezerot anymore. Gemara is closed. Yeah, but it's the same thing. It's not the same thing. That was an oil lamp. This is electricity. It's not the same thing. Take a look. Beautiful tshuva. Tons and tons of klalim like that. He reminded people. It's not like he made that. He reminded people. How many things are mutar because of the Pesikra Shedilani Alem Drabbanan? And so on. He made this accessible to people like you and me, not to great, great, great Talmidei. That was only people who knew it. He made it open to the entire public. And he made it loved by the entire public. And so he created a renaissance, really. You know, probably, I would go out on a limb to say, and this you could say that I'm exaggerating, but I would go out on a limb to say that the reason why you're here today in yeshiva has a great deal to do with Chacham Ovadia. Because you have an opportunity to be able to come into yeshiva and to learn. Of course, you'll learn Gemara, you can learn Gemara, but you have an ability, if you spend your time carefully, you have an ability to come into yeshiva and to come out actually knowing what to do in your life. What do I mean by that? You actually have an ability to know what's mutar and what's asur in practically every area that touches your life in halacha. So most people don't have the time to do it. You have the time to do it. And who helped you? He did. Before him, it was very hard to do. And he made it easy to do. And it's a remarkable thing. So for Sfaradim, it's definitely there. For Ashkenazim, you have to read it. You can't not read it. Because he presents to you so much just about Torah in general. Forget it, whether you pass him like him, you don't pass him like him. That's like a completely irrelevant question. The question is, do you read it in order to be able to get a well-rounded knowledge of Torah? Where else are you going to read where every single person who wrote about any subject is going to be brought in context of the particular issue that you're reading? And I have a friend in Borough Park, a Hasidish Dayan in Borough Park. His name is Rav Koenig. He comes to me and says, you know, he goes, nobody will own Yabi Omer in Borough Park. They don't want to show their allegiance. Why? Because there's question. You know, he was the chief rabbi of the Medina. Do you hold from the Medina? Not hold from the Medina. Just fine. A whole bunch of crazy nonsense. It's going to go away. All of it will go away. It's all a question of local politics. But he said, they won't read it. But guess what he said? He goes, I have a set. He said, my set is never full and complete. There's always a book missing. Because they take it and they copy down all of the sources that Hamadiyah writes there. They just don't say they got it from him. I think that, you know, we could go on and on, but I think that those for you in your situation now studying in yeshiva, that's the most important thing to know. You had this great Gaon who didn't waste a minute of his life. For what? To teach you. That's the whole reason of his life. Why? Because he loved you. And I mean you. I don't mean, you know, the proverbial you. I mean he loved you. Sitting in that chair, he loved you. He loved you as a simple member of Klal Yisrael. That was his greatest gadlut. You know what it is to be able to genuinely say Ve'ahavta le'racha kamocha? But he genuinely had a love for every member of Klal Yisrael and said, if I can teach somebody something, if I can give them more, if I can do another thing. He was 93 and still writing until 2 in the morning every night. You understand? I'm telling you, Einai ra'u velozar. I'm not telling you stories about what I heard. I saw it with my own eyes. We'd all go to sleep, he was still up. We get up in the morning, he's already up. Doing what? Sitting at the table and writing. Because he loved you. Because he wanted to teach. Because he wanted to give you an ability to have Torah that belongs to you. Didn't belong to him, didn't belong to him. It belongs to you. It's your morasha. So those are things that we can get from the Rav. A, use your mind. Know what you can know. Understand what you can understand. Use your time to teach yourself and to be an intelligent person. B, know what's mutar and what's asur. Know what to do in your life. Use what he made accessible. Understand that he made it accessible. Take advantage of it. And finally, and I think that this is the most important one, and with this we'll end because I see that we're ready for lunch or to sleep or whatever. This is the most important one. They say about him, and he said about himself many times and said to me many times, Koha dehetira adif. To be able to be matir something, to allow something, is better than making something asur. Why? The question is why. Because it says in the Torah, v'chayba, you're to live by this Torah. And when we put things against people, and we lock them into cages, and cage after cage, and cage after cage, and cage after cage, Torah doesn't become livable anymore. Torah is there to be able to be acting, and working, and involved. How do we know this? Because Aseh is Dohei Lo Ta'aseh. You know the Klal? If you have Mitzvah Aseh, you have Mitzvah Lo Ta'aseh, the Aseh is Dohei Lo Ta'aseh, which is counterintuitive. You're telling me that if the Torah tells you don't do something, the Torah tells you do something, that should counteract the Lo Ta'aseh? No! The Aseh is Dohei Lo Ta'aseh. Why? You have to act in your life. You have to engage in your life. You can always sit back and not do. Sheve Al Ta'aseh. But in Aseh is Dohei Lo Ta'aseh if they meet up with each other. You have to act. So if I keep telling you Asura, 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 so what do I have? You in a straight jacket? Chazak Baruch. So what did I do? A Hakam is supposed to make the Torah livable for people. That's why we need a Hakam. And so that's the last thing in your learning, understand. We're not trying to find an easy way out. We're trying to find a way to be able to live our life and engage in Torah while we're still engaged in life. And that's a very important klal. He used to sweat to find heter. I'm telling you, he used to sweat to find heter. He would spend hours on end to be able to discover heter for people in order. If he couldn't, then he didn't. He didn't try to make it play things that he made it whatever he wanted. He didn't. He knew and he did it appropriately, but if he could, he sweat to find a heter for people to be able to engage in Torah. He said things that we would never say today. He allowed things we would never allow. I'll end with this one example. He was asked a question once, if they could give a hechsher to a meat restaurant that sold milk things in the restaurant unrelated to the meat meals that they were eating. You understand what I'm saying? Right? They were selling candy bars, right? Chocolate candy bars, milk candy bars in the restaurant on your way out in the meat restaurant. Can you give a hechsher to such a thing? I don't think there's one person in this room that's not even, forget about being a rabbi, one person in this room that would even think twice, not think once, think, would never even think. Of course it's asur, it's crazy, how could you do it? He allowed it. Why did he allow it? There's a whole teshuvah, you all know why he allowed it. It's right there. It's not some secret thing that he told people or pela ozen, it's printed beautifully, broad pages, it's all right there. But why? He said, if you don't let the people eat there and we don't allow for this attempt, guess what they're going to eat? They're going to eat trefot. That's what they're going to eat. Be sensitive to the context. Understand what's going on in people's lives. Realize who you're talking to and what you're talking to and how you're talking. And understand, as it says in the first Mishnah in Perkei Avot, Hevu mitunim badin. Take time. Be careful. Pay attention to the dinim. What does Rabbi Ovadia say on the Mishnah? He says, if something came to you, you saw it once, twice, three times already you saw it. You know this thing. You've got it in the bag. This one everybody knows. Don't be so fast. Maybe there's something different here that you're not paying attention to. Maybe it's presented in a new context. And that, he was amazing at. There was nobody like him who did that. Thank you for the time. I apologize if I went a little bit over. רבי חנניה בן שאול אומר, עשה הקדוש ברוך הוא זכור ישראל כי כחרבה להם תורה נצבו שנאמר להם חפה סמן צדקו יגדיל תורה וידיר יתגדל יתגדל Thank you.
Do we get the government to hear? We have been contacted.
Thank you.